Chapter 12. Merrin 3. Merrin stood uncomfortably, trying not to blush in embarrassment, as the tailor pulled out yet another sea-silk cloth, this one red, and draped it over Merrin's shoulders. The thick-mustached man turned, eyebrows upraised questioningly. Arador tapped his cheek musingly. The room was well-lit and crafted of typical Kolinar granite, with woven mats on the floor and decorative pillars along the walls. Arador leaned against one of the room's pillars, watching the tailor work. "Well, ladies?" Arador asked, turning to the six young women who sat arrayed in bright-colored tallas and jewel-riddled hair buns to his side.
"Better," one of the women said.
Merrin still struggled to remember all of their names. He thought her name was Irina. A creature with dark hair and a plump face, she was the daughter of one of Lord Dalinar's trusted shard-bearers.
"I agree,"
said the one with light hair and a greenish dress. Ronel, he thought.
"But he doesn't look good in colors that bright. Try something darker, Master Taylor."
The other women agreed, nodding and chatting among themselves. Merrin flushed at the attention as the tailor removed the cloth and waved at his aides to bring him some other choices. It seemed ridiculous to Merrin that people could spend so much time worrying about clothing. Before the colors, Merrin had spent the better part of an hour trying on different cuts of shirts and trousers behind the changing screen, then presenting each new combination for Arador and the women to judge. Yet Arador and the ladies didn't seem to find the experience boring. As a matter of fact, they appeared to be enjoying themselves immeasurably. Of course, they weren't the ones standing on tired legs while the entire room gawked. If it hadn't been for his military training, Merrin was certain his legs would have given out long before. "Hang in there, Merrin," Arador said, reading Merrin's expression with a chuckle. "You'll be glad for the effort. These ladies are the finest judges of apparel in the court. When they're finished with you, your wardrobe will be the envy of the city." The women laughed demurely at the compliment. It seemed to Merrin that they were paying more attention to Arador than the clothing selections. That, however, was not a problem. Better Arador than Merrin.
"It certainly is good to have you back in the court, Lord Arador,"
Irina said as the tailor draped another cloth across Merrin's shoulders, letting it fall around his body like a cloak. Irina seemed the leader of the women, though from what Merrin understood, she was one of the lesser ranked of them. That was another thing he couldn't quite figure out, though. Noble ranks. "Oh," Arador said with a raised eyebrow. "I wasn't certain the court would even notice my absence."
"Lord Arador," one of the other ladies said with indignance. "Why, the court wasn't the same without you."
Arador chuckled, nodding toward Merrin.
"Don't get distracted, ladies."
They turned their attention to Merrin again, studying the new colors, a deep charcoal draped with gray.
"Far too dreary," Ronel pronounced. "Lord Merrin is somber enough without covering him in grays." "Besides," Irina said, "black reminds people of awakeners. No court-conscious man should wear anything too similar to it."
The tailor nodded, riffling through his cloths again as his assistants pulled off the charcoal in gray.
Somber, Merrin thought.
"Have you heard the story of Lord Merrin's bravery on the battlefield, ladies?" Arador asked. "You know, he saved the king's life."
Merrin flushed at the comment, but the women only grew more excited.
"Oh, yes," said one of the quieter women.
Merrin had forgotten her name, though she had a thin frame and wide eyes.
"We've heard of it,"
she sighed wistfully. Merrin's flush deepened. Of course she'd heard of it. Everyone had. In fact, most of the people he met couldn't stop talking about his heroic rise to nobility. To them, his exploit was as something out of the ballads. They didn't know how hasty and uncoordinated it had been. Of course, most of them seemed more fond of moaning over his dramatic power than actually congratulating Merrin on his success. It was as if there were two Merrins. One, the romanticized lord, the other, the awkward peasant-made nobleman.
"Did you really defeat a shardbearer without even a dagger?" one of the girls asked.
"Not exactly," Marin said with a sigh, his voice muffled as the tailor pulled a cloth over his head. This one had a hole in its center, so it fell evenly around his body.
"I just pulled him off of his horse. Someone else actually killed him."
"Lord Marin is too modest," Arador informed. "The Prahlan Shardbearer had broken protocol and was about to strike the king down. Everyone else scattered, and we were sure his majesty was doomed. Only one man was brave enough to come to his king's rescue."
The women turned properly amazed expressions toward Marin, mouths forming O's of wonder. The tailor stepped back, regarding Marin critically.
"No brown or tans, Master Tailor," Irina said, frowning. "Lord Marin has only recently become a shardbearer. Brown is too mundane a color. There is no reason to give a reminder of what he once was now, is there?"
The tailor nodded, moving to remove the cloth. Marin sighed to himself.
"Arador," he said as the tailor worked, "isn't there something more important I should be doing?"
"A man has to look good," Arador replied. "Half of being a lord is looking the part."
"That's the thing," Marin said. "I'm still not sure what it means to be a lord. What is it I'm supposed to do? Surely there's more to it than dressing well."
Arador chuckled.
"You're always so concerned about what you should be doing. People aren't going to tell you what to do all the time anymore. Being a lord isn't so much about what you're supposed to do as it is about what you feel you need to do. Besides, having a shard blade doesn't mean you can't relax once in a while."
Standing and being draped with cloth didn't seem much like relaxing to Marin. However, he simply sighed and decided to bear it. Arador probably knew what he was doing. The tailor finished again and stepped back.
"That's perfect," Lady Irina proclaimed,
a sentiment that the others agreed with after a moment of discussion. Marin looked down. The chosen color was a dark maroon crossed with a sash of deep navy. It was only one of four color combinations the women had decided they liked. All of them were darker colors, maroon, dark green, and several shades of blue.
"Yes," Ronell said with satisfaction. "Well done, Master Tailor."
The man bowed at the compliment, motioning for his assistants to gather up the cloths and repack them. Marin looked questioningly toward Arador, eyebrows raised hopefully. Arador nodded, waving him down off the raised platform. Just then the door opened, and Renarin stepped in, a customarily dazed expression on his face. Immediately the room fell silent as the women stopped their chatting. Renarin stood for a moment, looking across the room. His hair was disheveled, as it often was, and he somehow managed to stand halfway in shadow despite the room's brightness. The women sat in silence, shooting glances at each other. They tried to maintain their smiles, but even Marin could see that they were uncomfortable.
"I'm sorry to interrupt," Renarin said, turning to go.
"Nonsense, brother," Arador said, waving him forward. "We were finished here anyway, weren't we, ladies?"
The women rose, smiling and offering belated welcomes to Renarin. They bid Arador farewell, each getting promises from him that he would call upon them soon. Renarin watched them go, then turned to Arador as the door closed behind them.
"It didn't take them long to start fighting for your affection," he noted.
"Ah, you're too cynical, brother," Arador said, still watching the door, shaking his head wistfully. "We've been gone too long. There haven't been any men here to give them attention. Poor things."
"They could have come with us to Prahla," Renarin replied. "The winds know we could have used a few more scribes."
Arador chuckled.
"That lot would never have survived the Stormlands. This is their element. And now that we're back, our dear Marin had better watch out."
Marin frowned as he joined the two brothers, picking up his shard blade as the tailor and his assistants left out the back door.
"What was that?" Marin asked. "Why do I have to watch out?"
"Unmarried shard bearer?" Arador asked. "Savior of the king? Newly adopted into House Colin? You're a prime catch, my friend. If you don't watch yourself, one of those ladies' mothers will have you wedded before you realize what happened.
And knowing my brother, Renarin added, he's doing everything he can to help them out. You realize half the reason he held this little tailoring session was to introduce you to the local eligible women?
A little socializing never hurt a man, Arador said. You should try it sometime, Renarin.
Meryn fastened on Dalinar's cloak, testing the new length. Arador had ordered one of the tailor's assistants to hem it, and they had returned it when they arrived.
I appreciate the help, Arador, Meryn said, but the truth is I don't know if I'll be able to afford much clothing this month. I plan to send the stipend your father gave me to my parents in Stonemount.
Oh, don't worry, Arador said with a wave of his hand. If you need more, I'll loan it to you. Now, are you ready for today's other activity?
Meryn frowned. There's more? He asked, stretching his tired limbs.
You're the one who's always asking what his duties are, Arador reminded him. Well, it's time to start them. If you're going to compete in Elikar's dueling competition, you'll need to learn how to use that blade and plate of yours.
Dueling competition? Meryn asked, feeling a twinge of excitement. Me?
Of course, Arador explained. The king ordered all shardbearers to attend, and you're a shardbearer. Unless you want to be made a fool of, you'll want to learn how to duel a bit before you get thrown into a ring.
Meryn smiled. Finally, something that made sense. The ballads made one thing clear. Shardbearers dueled.
Where do we start?
Arador nodded.
To your room, he said. We'll start with the plate, then we'll go find you a dueling instructor.
Father thinks it was a group known as the Ranta, Renarin explained.
Ranta?
Arador asked as he unpacked Meryn's shard plate, arranging the various pieces on the floor.
It means distant mountain, Renarin said. When he founded Pralir, King Talmeshas had to conquer a number of smaller nations. He had to hold both the Prenin Late and the western coast of Prala if he wanted to found a kingdom with any measure of stability. Ranta is an underground rebellion populated by the noble lines of those conquered kingdoms. They've been a stone in Pralir's shoe for the last 2 decades, burning villages, attacking caravans, and destroying soldiered garrisons.
An underground rebel group? Arador asked skeptically. That doesn't sound like the kind of organization who could destroy an army of 20,000. If they could do something like that, why stay underground? In fact, if they had those kinds of numbers, I doubt they could have stayed underground.
Renarin shrugged.
The old nobility of Pralir, the ones who have made peace with Elikar, hoping that he'll let them retain a margin of power, are convinced it was the Ranta. They say the group has been hiding in distant Pral for a few years, gaining strength. If they attacked at the right time, as an ambush, it's conceivable they could have destroyed the traitor's secret force. At least they had motive. If there was a group out there who hated Talmeshas Pralir more than Elikar, it was the Ranta.
Arador shook his head, not convinced as he regarded the shard plate. Meryn's room was relatively small, but it was blessedly big compared to the simple floor mat and crowded troop tent he had used during his time in the military. There was a bed, a table, and a stool. And while the floor was empty of rugs or mats, Arador said Meryn could purchase either whenever he wished. Right now, the stones were covered with the array of metal shard plate sections. There were over 10 set pieces, and all had leather straps. But strangely, no buckles. Meryn looked down, bewildered. He didn't even know where to begin.
Shardplate is kind of a misnomer,
Arador began, selecting a piece of armor, the largest piece, a breastplate-shaped cuirass.
It doesn't really bond to a person the way shardblades do. It probably got the name because shardbearers were the ones who tended to wear it.
He motioned for Meryn to hold his arms out, then fitted the breastplate across Meryn's chest. The leather straps constricted quickly, and Meryn cried out in surprise. The piece of armor felt like something living, clamping onto his chest like the jaws of an animal. It halted a moment later, however. Meryn wiggled slightly, amazed at how freely he could breathe. The metal was heavy, but weighed far less than the metal breastplates he had occasionally trained with as a spearman. In fact, despite being a single sheet of metal, it felt less constrictive than even his layered wooden spearman's armor.
"Shardplate fits to its owner," Ardor explained, reaching for the shoulder guards. "However, it doesn't bond to you. If you take it off, it will fit to the next person just as quickly as it did you."
Ardor placed the shoulder guards, and they too immediately locked into place, their straps clamping on and fitting to Meryn's body.
"You can put the armor on by yourself, but it's a bit awkward," Ardor explained, moving on to the left arm. "If you want to take it off, you can touch the clasp underneath each piece and it will unlock. The armor will stop pretty much any weapon, as long as it doesn't manage to slide into a chink between two pieces. Shard blades are the exception. Plate will only stop a shard blade on the first blow. If you get hit squarely in the same place twice, the plate will probably give way."
"Then what?" Meryn asked as Ardor affixed pieces of plate to both arms. "Is my armor ruined?"
Ardor shook his head, picking up some pieces of armor that fit around the bottom of the chest plate, protecting his sides and waist.
"It will repair itself, molding back into its original shape. That takes time, though, so you'll want to avoid getting hit."
Meryn nodded as Ardor handed him the cod piece, then moved on to helping him attach the leg pieces and metal boots. When he was done, Meryn was covered completely in steel except for his head and hands. It was a strange feeling, like he had been dipped in a pool of molten metal. Meryn wobbled slightly. It was awkward, that was for certain. However, not because of the weight. Strangely, he felt no more burdened than when Ardor had affixed the first piece. Instead, it was just different. There were tugs on his body in irregular places, and his balance felt slightly irregular. He raised an arm, and it swung up with ease. Carefully, he tested his motion, squatting down and standing up again. Then he tried a small jump. He cried out in surprise as he went higher than expected, almost as high as he would have gone if he weren't wearing several ten-set brick weights of metal. Ardor steadied him as he teetered maladroitly.
"It takes some getting used to," Dalinar's heir said with a chuckle. "The shard plate was made by awakeners, like your blade. It compensates for itself, making you stronger and quicker. If you know how to balance the combination of awkwardness and enhancement, you can actually be more fluid in the plate than you would be normally. You'll definitely be stronger. The plate also cushions you from blows. Wearing this, you could probably take a catapult boulder in the chest and come out alive."
Ardor bent over, picking up the last three pieces of armor.
"These are the most important pieces of equipment," he explained. "The gauntlets and the helmet. Most people who attack you will go for your head. It's the most exposed part of the body. We don't know why, but no suits of shardplate were made with faceplates. Some people try affixing regular steel faceplates to them, but many prefer visibility instead. No shardbearer following protocol will swing for your face, though they may attack the side of your head. Spearmen and other citizens, however, will always go for the face. That's practically the only place they can hurt you."
Meryn nodded, accepting the helmet and placing it on his head. Like the other pieces, it immediately sized to fit him, and rested more snugly than his spearman's cap ever had.
"The gauntlets are designed to give you flexibility," Ardor explained, holding out the left gauntlet for Meryn to slide his hand into.
The gauntlet was crafted from what appeared to be a heavy leather glove fitted with intricate plates of steel running along the back. However, flexing his hand, he realized he could feel through the leather as if it were extraordinarily thin.
"It's amazing," Meryn whispered.
Ardor smiled, holding out the other gauntlet, and Meryn slid his hand into it as well. Immediately, the room pitched around him. Meryn stumbled, disoriented at the strange sensation. The air seemed
thick somehow, liquid. It rippled and shifted like... It stopped. Marin shook his head uncertainly, lifting a gauntleted hand.
"Is that supposed to happen?" he asked.
"What?" Aurador asked with concern.
I'm not sure, Marin said. The room suddenly felt different. I can't explain it.
Aurador looked toward Renarin. The younger brother shrugged.
It's probably just the initial surge, Aurador explained. Every time I put the last piece of plate on, I just feel a slight burst of strength as the plate completes itself.
Maybe that was it, Marin said slowly.
Well, Aurador said, standing, that's your armor. Now that you know how to put it on, take it off. We've got to get to the monastery while there's still some light left for training.
Kolinar was beautiful. Marin couldn't remember a day when it had been the capital of Alethkar, but it had an oath gate, which meant it dated back to the days of the Epic Kingdoms. Before his ascension to nobility, Marin had never visited a late. He had known that there were valleys where rivers ran down the center. The idea of a constantly running river itself was amazing enough. Back in Stonemount, water had only flowed right after a high storm. Rain had to be collected carefully so that there would be water to drink between storms. Marin had imagined the river to be like the waterways back home, small and swift running, flowing through cracks with the quick energy of a storm. He had never imagined such a broad, rushing mass of water. It passed by a short distance from Kolinar, far enough away that floods following high storms wouldn't be a problem. There was so much water that, when he had first seen it the week before, Marin had stood stunned for at least 10 heartbeats before Aurador was able to get his attention. The lake itself was a valley, one with relatively stiff sides. They were smooth, worn by countless high storms, but the incline was steep enough for Marin to finally understand just why lakes were so perfect for cities. In Prala, his squad had been taught to avoid narrow canyons for fear of being in one when a high storm caused a flash flood. The Late Valley, however, was wide enough not to be dangerous, but still steep enough that it weakened storms greatly. Indeed, the high storms that had come since Marin's arrival in Kolinar had been almost laughably docile. The result was fertility. Rock buds lined the sides of the valley, so many of them, in fact, that he could barely see the rock underneath. All of them were in bloom, despite the fact that the last high storm had been several days before. The landscape was green instead of stonish tan. It had been unsettling at first, all of that color, but he was quickly growing to appreciate it. Aurador said that the rock buds only withdrew into their shells during the very height of summer, when the air grew too dry even for the humid valley, or the dead of winter when the rains fell so steadily that many plants had to withdraw lest the moisture rot them. The roads of the city were kept free of rock buds, and the ground was so smooth that Marin had begun copying Aurador, wearing only a pair of comfortable slippers. Back in his village, most buildings had been allowed to give in to the elements. Rock buds were not removed, and continual buildup of cromstone from winter storms formed stalactites on overhangs, making the buildings look almost like natural formations of stone. In Kolinar, however, everything was sculpted with neat lines. Triangular shapes predominated, with peaked arches and doorways, and many buildings were constructed on grand scales with massive columns and large open foyers, something only possible in a place where the high storms lacked fury. Aurador led Marin toward the edge of town, where they would find Shieldholm Monastery. As they traveled the smooth streets, Marin shook his head in wonder. 2 years earlier, he had traveled to a monastery to learn to wield a spear. What would he have thought had he known he would be returning several years later to take up dueling as a nobleman and a shard-bearer? Such thoughts were banished, however, as Marin idly caught sight of a passing building. He froze immediately, staring with awe, and more than a little apprehension. The large, black structure was crafted in a bulbous shape that seemed to defy regular architectural conventions. It almost looked like an enormous pyre, a massive burst of flame that had somehow been captured and transformed into rock.
Arador and Renarin paused beside him.
"It's the Kolinar Cablin," Arador said. "Hall of the Awakeners. A little eerie, isn't it?"
Meron nodded. He'd heard of Cablins before, of course, but they didn't have one in Stonemount, or in any of the nearby villages. In the rare instance an Awakener was discovered in a rural area, they were always sent to a larger city, and the village was paid a percentage of the profits that came through the awakenings the creature performed. A group of servants was driving a line of carts toward the Cablin, each one bearing a large block of stone. A couple of figures stood at the base of the marble building, and they wore black. Meron shivered as one of the figures turned toward him. Meron couldn't see what it looked like because of the distance, but he knew the stories. Awakeners weren't quite human. Not anymore. Their arts changed them.
"I've always wondered what the inside looked like," Renarin noted, looking at the Cablin.
Arador shivered visibly.
"I have absolutely no idea and no desire to find out. In fact, if I never had to see an Awakener except on the day of the Charin, it would be fine with me."
"They are the fuel of our economy," Renarin said in his unassuming voice. "Without them, gemstones would be useless and we would be paupers, my brother."
"Well, that's fine," Arador said. "Let them fuel the economy, as long as they do it from within their building."
Meron nodded.
"I agree," he mumbled.
The figure was still looking at him. He had only seen an Awakener once during his Charin. It had been a young man, one who hadn't been an Awakener very long. Only the unlearned were wasted on the Charin. That Awakener hadn't looked any different from a regular person, but he would change. Apparently they all did, eventually. Meron could still remember the glowing bit of quartz hovering above the Awakener's hand. He could remember his fear as the quartz floated forward, still glowing, to touch Meron's skin. It had shattered, sending a strange sensation through his body. A sudden vibration, a feeling like each of his bones had been scraped against rough stone at once. Supposedly, that one experience made Meron immune to awakening for the rest of his life. There was no reason to fear the creatures, for they no longer had power over him. Even still, when the day of the Charin came each year thereafter, he had found a way to be out in the fields when the Awakener arrived to perform the ritual on the children of age that year.
"Be thankful, brother," Renarin noted, "that the Almighty didn't decide to make you an Awakener."
Arador snorted. "Come on, let's get to the monastery while there's still light." Meron nodded eagerly, joining Arador as they walked away. Renarin lingered for a moment, then followed. Soon they had left the Cablin behind, and a structure with a familiar architecture rose up before them. Arador said that Shieldholm Monastery was one of Kolinar's most famous landmarks. Founded during the Ninth Epoch, the monastery contained the most skilled masters of dueling in all of Alethkar. As they walked through the broad, glyph-covered gates, Meron immediately felt a familiarity. 2 years earlier, when he had first joined the military, he had been taken to a strike-home monastery in Norkadav for initial training. While the city had been much less grand than Kolinar, the monasteries had been nearly the same. The ground was covered with sand for training, and the monastery was made up of four walled courtyards with quarters for the monks lining the outer perimeter. Arador kicked off his slippers, motioning for Meron to do the same.
"I need to go speak with the monks," Arador explained, "and have them gather their masters to see if any are willing to train you. Go over and watch the men spar if you like. It will give you a feel for the training."
Meron nodded as Arador wandered off. There were several groups practicing in the courtyard, including one to his left, which was composed of men in colorful clothing, obviously lords. Merrin wandered their direction, curious. Several pairs, jeweled with shard blades, an action that Merrin would have considered dangerous, had Arador not explained that once a shard blade was bonded, it could be dulled for sparring. The majority of the men, however, dueled with regular swords. As Merrin approached, he realized with a sinking feeling that he recognized several of these men.
"Well," Meridas said, holding up a hand to stop his duel. "Greetings to you, peasant shard-bearer."
Merrin frowned, wishing he'd recognized the man earlier. What was he doing in Kolinar? Meridas was attendant to the king. He should have remained in Rel Aram.
"Come to learn how to duel, little citizen?" Meridas asked, sword held casually at his side as a few other noblemen gathered around him with interested expressions. "You'll have to be careful. Wouldn't want to get hurt by accident. Then someone else would have to be given that pretty blade of yours."
Merrin sighed, turning away from Meridas and the others. He felt their laughter on his neck as he walked away. Every time that he felt like he was growing to be accepted in Dalinar's court, someone reminded him that he didn't really belong. Arador and Renarin could only do so much. They had their own lives and their own duties. They couldn't watch out for Merrin forever. Eventually, he would have to find his own way.
"You won't be able to make everyone like you, but you might be able to make them respect you."
Dalinar's words from before returned to him. Merrin looked down at his blade. Perhaps dueling was the way to earn that respect. He wandered across the courtyard looking for other duels to watch. Most of the noblemen were near Meridas, so Merrin instead found himself watching a group of older monks. Like many monks who followed the Order of Khonra, they wore long tan skirts and loose shirts instead of traditional robes. They fought with swords, though they weren't necessarily noblemen. Monks were considered to have neither class nor gender, and they could practice any art they wished, whether it be painting or dueling. The monks were very good. They fought with wooden practice swords, and their motions were fluid, rhythmic. Watching their smooth, controlled motions seemed to calm a bit of the chaos in Merrin's recent life. After a few moments, one of the monks noticed him watching. The man paused, regarding Merrin with the eyes of a warrior.
"Shouldn't you be practicing with the other lords, traveler?"
Merrin shrugged.
"I don't really fit in with them, Holy One."
"Your clothing says that you should," the monk said, nodding to Merrin's fine sea-silk outfit.
Merrin grimaced. The monk raised an eyebrow questioningly. He was an older man, perhaps the same age as Merrin's father, and had a strong build beneath his monk's clothing. He was almost completely bald, save for a bit of hair on the sides of his head, and even that was beginning to gray.
"It's nothing, Holy One," Merrin said. "I'm just a little bit tired of hearing about clothing."
"Maybe this will take your mind off of it,"
the monk said, tossing him a practice sword.
"And don't call me Holy One."
Merrin caught the sword, looking down at it blankly. Then he yelped in surprise, dropping his shard blade and raising the practice sword awkwardly as the monk stepped forward in a dueling stance. Merrin wasn't certain how to respond. All of his training in the army had focused on working within his squad, using his shield to protect his companions and his spear to harry the opponent. He'd rarely been forced to fight solitarily. The monk came in with a few testing swings, and Merrin tried his best to mimic the man's stance. He knew enough not to engage the first few blows. They were meant to throw Merrin off balance and leave him open for a strike. He retreated across the cool sand, shuffling backward and trying not to fall for the monk's feints. Even still, the man's first serious strike took Merrin completely by surprise. The blow took Merrin on the shoulder. It was delivered lightly, but it stung anyway.
"Your instincts are good," the monk said, returning to his stance, "but your swordsmanship is atrocious."
"That's kind of why I'm here," Merrin said, trying another stance.
This time he managed to dodge the first blow, though the backhand caught him on the thigh. He grunted in pain.
"Your blade is unbonded," the monk said, "and you resist moving to the sides as if you expect there to be someone standing beside you. You are a spearman?"
"Yes," Marin said. The monk stepped back, lowering his blade and resting the tip in the sand.
"You must have done something incredibly brave to earn yourself a blade, little spearman."
"Either that or I was just lucky," Marin replied.
The monk smiled, then nodded toward the center of the courtyard.
"Your friend is looking for you."
Marin turned to see Arador waving for him. Marin nodded thankfully to the monk and returned the practice sword, then picked up his shard blade and jogged across the sands toward Arador. Standing with Dalinar's son was a group of elderly, important-looking monks.
"Marin," Arador began, "these are the monastery masters. Each of them is an expert at several dueling forms, and they'll be able to train you in the one that fits you best. Masters Bendaka and Lonin are currently accepting new students. You can train with either one of them, though you'll need to pay the standard 100-ish mark tribute to the monastery out of your monthly stipend."
Marin regarded the two monks Arador had indicated. Both looked very distinguished, almost uncomfortably so. They regarded Marin with the lofty expressions of men who had spent their entire lives practicing their art, and who had risen to the highest of their talents. They stood like kings in their monasteries, not condescending, but daunting nonetheless. Marin glanced to the side, a sudden impression taking him.
"Holy ones, I am honored by your offer, but I feel a little overwhelmed. Could you tell me, is the monk I just sparred with accepting students at the moment?"
The masters frowned.
"You mean Vasher?"
one of them asked.
"Why do you wish to train with him?"
I'm not certain," Marin confessed.
One of the masters waved for a younger monk and sent him running off toward Vasher's group. As he did so, Arador pulled Marin aside with a concerned face.
"What are you doing?" Arador asked quietly.
"Those masters make me uncomfortable, Arador," Marin said.
Arador rolled his eyes.
"You're going to have to get over that, Marin. You're a lord now."
"I'm trying," Marin replied, "but
the man you sent for isn't even a proper monk," Arador said. "He's oath-given, not birth-given. He joined the monastery by choice rather than being given by his parents before the age of his charin. He won't be a dueling master. He probably just came here by happenstance."
"Arador," Marin said frankly, "I came here by happenstance."
Arador just sighed as the young monk approached, the man Marin had sparred with, Vasher, following behind.
"What is this about, masters?"
Vasher asked in a calm voice.
"This child wishes you to be his master,"
the senior master said, waving toward Marin.
"He wishes to know if you are taking any students."
Vasher snorted.
"You really don't know what you're doing, do you, little spearman?"
Marin just shrugged.
"Very well," Vasher said. "If he is willing to do what I say, I'll train him."
Arador groaned quietly, but the masters just nodded and began walking away. Vasher turned back toward the corner of the monastery, where the monks he had been sparring with still practiced. Uncertain what else to do, Marin tagged along behind. Once they had reached the place he had dueled before, Marin set aside his shard blade and reached for a practice sword. Vasher reached out a foot and placed it on the sword just as Marin began to lift it.
"No,"
he said. Marin rose uncertainly, watching as Vasher walked over to the weapons pile and selected an object. He returned with a large, thick-hafted horse-killer arrow and handed it to Marin.
"An arrow?"
Marin asked slowly.
"A little spear," Vasher said, "for a little spearman. I don't want you thinking you are a duelist. You haven't earned a practice sword yet."
"You let me fight with one before, master," Marin protested.
"That was before you were my student," Vasher informed. "And don't call me master. My name is Vasher.
From this moment on and until I declare your training complete, you are not to duel with anyone unless I give you permission. You may not swing a sword, even that shard blade of yours, unless it is under my direction. Do you understand?
Yes, sir,
Marin snapped, spearman training returning.
And don't call me sir, either, Vasher said with a bitter scowl. You're a lord, not a footman. Follow my rules if you wish. Learn from me as you wish, and leave as you wish. I care not.
Okay, Marin said, eyeing the arrow with skepticism.
Good. Now watch.
Vasher turned, falling into a stance and raising his sword. He stood there for a moment, then turned expectant eyes on Marin. Marin quickly mimicked Vasher's stance. The monk walked over to him, nudging Marin's foot forward a few inches, correcting his posture, and showing him how to grip the arrow.
Good, Vasher said. How high can you count?
I don't know,
Marin confessed, holding still in the stance.
As high as I want, I suppose.
Good, Vasher said, turning and walking back toward his dueling partner. Hold that stance for 1,000 heartbeats. When you're done, let me know and we'll do another.
Marin frowned, but the monk said nothing further. A bead of sweat rolled down Marin's cheek in the sunlight.
What have I gotten myself into?
He wondered, sighing internally.